So hello, everyone, and welcome to our Advanced Clinical Resources call today with Dr. Rosensweet. I'm excited to be here with you guys and to have Dr. Rosensweet here, who is just an amazing resource in the area of bioidentical hormones and helping people to get back their health via bioidentical hormones. And we had him on the radio show probably about a year and a half ago. Was it that long? It was a while back. And we had such a great interview and we had so much fun talking about this stuff that I wanted him to come back and share with you guys. So for your background, Dr. Rosensweet, we are the Institute of Nutritional Endocrinology, and these people are engaged in a two-year program that is, you know, just really going deep with functional medicine, nutrition, hormones, et cetera. So they have the tools. Now, some of our practitioners are medical doctors. Some of them are nurses or nurse practitioners, some chiropractors, but others are health coaches and folks that don't have a license to do the prescribing. And so a lot of the questions that come up for us is, where does this fit into the big picture? And we thought you would be a great authority to share that kind of stuff with us. So I have a list of questions that people have compiled. I have some questions of my own. But before we dig into that, I'd really love it for you to give everybody a little bit of background on who you are and how you got into this whole world, and a little bit about your target method and how it's different from some of the other approaches to bioidentical hormones. So I'm going to turn the camera on to you and have you take it away.
And do I get to participating?
What's that?
Do I get to see who else is participating?
Or no, this particular platform doesn't let us see them unless we actually bring them on. We're looking at a new platform to go to called Zoom, which would have let us see everybody.
So I came into this world through my mother, who I adore, and I got into medicine. I knew I wanted to be a doctor at a very early age, and I had the great privilege of going to the University of Michigan Medical School, which was like a temple to me. And in my senior year, I started getting a little queasy. I was about to hit the streets, so to speak, and I didn't know anything about healing. And so I started exploring on my own, and this was 1968. And I ran into the Yellow Emperor's book and a few other books, and I got excited. I went, oh, there's other things going on out here. Although I treasure my traditional education. Oh, my God, I use it every single day. So glad I went through the medical school channel for me at my time in history and for what I wanted to do. And then I delivered my son at home. And it started me down a path. I didn't deliver him,
you
know. Yeah. And his mother delivered him, and he came out. And it just continued the path. I was a deep believer in nutrition right from the beginning. And just kept on seeking tools, though. I never thought of it as alternative medicine. I thought, well, what works? You know, you got patients coming to you. They want stuff that helps them. So I explored deeply the world of nutrition and detoxification and emotions and the mind and stress that played into my own healing. And I went into general practice, and I was always in general practice, and I attracted to the patient population that was interested in healing in more natural ways. And my practice just moved along, and you know, when I was a young doctor, I was delivering babies and seeing kids. And as I grew older, my patients grew older. Along comes my first menopausal patient 25 years ago, and an amazing thing happened. She was complaining of some severe symptoms. I mean severe, and I had known this woman as a patient for quite a while, and she was going crazy, and she was mad at me because she wanted me to believe her, because she was a very successful woman in general, but she was really feeling awful. And I had just serendipitously spoken to Dr. John Lee about progesterone. And so the only thing I knew was give her a little progesterone. And 3 weeks later, she called me back and said, oh, my God, I'm back to myself. Thank you so much. And that started me down the menopausal trail. But like everyone in the room that's viewing this, we all draw to us, for all the reasons that we do, the perfect people to work with. And I was fascinated with menopause because so little could be done, so much could be done with so little. Mm. So the success wasn't these long, hard projects to help someone who's chronically ill get well. It was something swift and effective, and people really liked it.
Nice, yeah.
And I was bioidentical right away because I had already been organic for my whole adult life. And then the more I learned, and I had the privilege of connecting up with 24-hour urine hormone testing, so I got to learn things that just weren't out there. Mm-hmm. And the more I learned, the more interested I was in it, and at a certain point, I started going, you know what, I'm asking women to apply these hormones to their skin twice a day. I realized that they were using solvents that were quite intense, and I did some research on that. I said, hey, listen, let's do something organic, and I figured it out. And so the Target Method got born in two different ways. One, because I was doing more and more teaching, and my son, my business partner, and I decided, rather than me traveling all over the country, why don't we just put it on video?
Yeah.
And doctors and practitioners could watch it at their leisure.
Yeah.
So we developed this training program, and your whole audience is open to this. I think it's excellent. It's 15 hours. And we put that, and then we, about 8 years ago, we started to get really serious about the organic oils-based hormones. So that's what 90% of my patients are using, as well as 100 or so prescribers that we've trained over the years. So a lot of women in the United States who are using these organic oils.
That's great. That's great. Wow. I love that story because it fits all what we're talking about. You know, the way we approach things, how you came out of school with the, hey, now what do I have to learn to really learn to heal people, and going down, you know, some of those other pathways, and your idea that it's not alternative. It's just all, you know, it's what works for somebody to restore balance. It's balancing, right? It's all about balance.
What's healing and what works, really.
Yeah.
And I originally threw out the baby with the bathwater and threw out almost every beautiful and modern approach that there was, being a hippie friend at that time. And my goodness, if I reintegrated, so anything is fair game for me, from chemotherapy to you know, the organic oils, whatever works, whatever is sitting in front of me. So nothing's out of line for me.
Yeah.
I love it. I love every great tool. And just, you know, I'm very cautious around when I use some of these more intense tools.
Right. But there's always a place for some things temporarily.
Absolutely.
Right. So one of the things that we all talk about is we're all, you know, and you came from that same place of food and meditation and, you know, the energy and all of that stuff plays in. So a lot of people here, because they don't have prescribing routes, or even the people that do, want to use it judiciously. At what point do you step in and say, yeah, this person needs bioidenticals, versus, you know, stepping back and looking at, of course, their adrenal stress and their diet and their exercise and their exposures and their detoxification pathways and all those other things?
Well, I sort of look at it from a different perspective, in that it's always come at me, individual patient by individual patient by individual patient. And as anyone knows, by the time the 40 or 50,000 mile mark comes, there isn't a single issue. Now, some patients have been totally devoted to their health.
Yeah.
And are doing a fantastic job of it. And they hit that hormonal decline, and all they need is bioidentical hormone replacement.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's extremely rare.
Yeah. Yeah.
At the other end of the spectrum, an individual patient comes in, and they've got a long list of symptoms. You know, they're tired, they're not sleeping well, their energy is way low, their appetite's not that good, their mood is disturbed, their libido is disturbed. Some real core questions right there, which
right.
I always love to know. And, you know, there's a lot of things, as everyone in that room knows. You know, when we're under stress, when we've been stressed through nutritional inadequacy or inappropriateness, or through exercise issues, or through detoxification, or through the biological response to stress, things deteriorate universally. Every cell, tissue, organ, and molecule in the whole body declines.
Yes.
And they know bioidentical hormone on the planet
is going to fix it.
Insulin, the fat balance, the nutritional needs. Right. So to me, it always comes down to the patient in front of me, in the sense that what are they ready, willing, and able to do?
Mm.
What's step number one that I can inspire them with so they'll go, well, I went to this doctor and I paid money and I actually got a result. Maybe I'm willing to listen to his second suggestion.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Entering the world of nutrition, for some folks, this is a major project.
Yeah.
As anyone who's made a transition from toxic nutrition to nutrition
right.
knows, and same with exercise. So it's always patient by patient. What is the thing today?
Right.
Can I get them one or two or maybe three things to implement into their already busy and overwhelmed yeah. lives?
Yeah.
And what's the priority?
Yeah.
So now we have to break it down to the individual patient. Now, for me, a lot of the times patients show up in my office, I'd say the majority of them, things are not going well.
Well, that's why they're there, right? That's they don't just show up and say, hey, I just wanted to see you today.
That's right. And so I take a very, very thorough history. In fact, I have the patient take the history.
Yeah.
Oops. Anyone in this audience can get a sample of that questionnaire. If you get me their email address, they give me their email address, we will email them this questionnaire. And it's very extensive. And it goes into details beyond which I was taught.
Right.
And I learned a tremendous amount. And they've emailed me that prior to showing up in the visit.
Perfect. Yeah.
And the very last page of this 16-page questionnaire actually summarizes everything that was in the first 15.
Hmm.
So I've got a permanent medical record. I used to take notes one page, one line at a time.
Yeah.
They've done it all for me. And by the end of reading that questionnaire and reviewing it with them and asking them a few additional questions and doing a physical exam, I got a pretty good idea yeah. of what's first.
Yeah.
Now let's take menopausal women.
Yeah.
A certain percentage of them don't know they're in menopause. They're fatigued and they're weight and they're having sleep disturbance. These are big disruptors. If I start to see that, oh, this is an obvious thing, their hormones are depleted to the point where they can barely make it to work or to their house, whatever they're doing,
mm-hmm.
I hold that as the highest priority. So in many instances, in my particular practice, they're feeling lousy. And as I teach doctors, when you are working with a woman in the menopausal age group, and she can have a long list of symptoms, including some very severe ones. If this is related to menopause, treat her with the bioidentical hormones. And prior to doing any long, extensive, expensive workouts, see what's left after you regulate her hormones.
Mm.
It's shocking. Things you'd never expect, from feeling terrible to feeling back online.
Yeah.
These hormones are powerful and they can make a major difference. So I say to doctors, before you go wild with diagnostic tests, treat her hormones, see what you got left of her symptoms. And we go into this in quite a great depth in the target method. We list all the symptoms and how to address them. So that's how it works. It's patient by patient. Now, some patients are going to come in. They're going to be 40 pounds overweight or more, and they're going to have the common garden variety stuff that's going on. The stresses in their lives have disrupted their glucose insulin regulating mechanism. Their diets mm-hmm. are perpetuating that terribly.
Mm-hmm.
You can't attribute all menopausal weight gain to hormones
right.
by any means. So it's sorting out. So not only do I do the questionnaire and my physical exam, I do a rather extensive set of first blood tests.
Mm-hmm.
I wait till that first visit to do it. I want to know what their clinical picture is before I'm using the test.
Yeah.
I list all the basic tests that you do. And interestingly enough, it's very rare, and I'm talking about a menopausal woman here, it's very rare that I do a 24-hour uterine hormone test right up front, because if I'm hearing the symptoms of menopause, what am I going to find out if I test if they're low?
Yeah.
So they've gotten to pay the lab for me to be able to tell them you're low in your hormones. I already knew. So I want to bounce it back to you and see where you want to go with this.
Yeah, no, that's really awesome. I really love that. We are very big on questionnaires, and I would love to be able to get access and have us, you know, improve our questionnaire taking from your years of experience, because that's a big part of what I do. I have a whole, I think we have a 12-hour module on history taking and all the questions to ask and all that, which goes, of course, way beyond what we were taught in school, because it's there's a lot of more practical and pragmatic things that we want to know. First of all, practical question is, how do we get their email to you? Do you have a place on your site, or do you have a place where they should write to, or a website, web page they should go to?
If they go to the Target method, there's a place called Contact Us. So that would be www.thetargetmethod.com.
Okay.
Contact Us.
Okay. And then just mention that you said that they could get a copy of that, and great.
And they should list what they want,
right, unless you want the copy of the comprehensive questionnaire. Yeah. Okay, great. That's perfect. So I'm going to look, because I have a bunch of questions that have been come in. I want to make sure we cover all of them. And I think we covered all of the ones I wanted to talk about. And I totally agree that it's individual by individual. I think what I was more asking for is not like, where do you start with everybody, but are there particular things that if we're a non-prescribing, we don't have access to bioidenticals and we have to find a practitioner to refer to or refer them back to their primary, things that we should look for that would say, okay, you know, you've done this insulin dysregulation balance, they've fixed up their diet, now things aren't as moving along as quickly as we thought. What should we look for?
More carefully. If a patient has shown up to a non-prescriber, of course, there's a reason why they happen to show up to a non-prescriber rather than a prescriber. And so I always like to honor and respect exactly what's going on. And it may be that non-prescriber is going to be careful enough and give the patient enough time that the non-prescriber is going to be able to sort out that, wow, there's a broad range of issues that are very important to this patient's
life. Right.
Coronary arteries, blood, you know, all these things. Yet, it's leaping off the pages and out of her mouth to me that menopause is in the foreground here.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's going to be times it's the very first move to do is to refer to someone who is skilled and trained in menopause, because just like any field, you can have the detrimental professionals, you can have the mediocre,
right. Yeah.
You can have the good,
mm-hmm.
and the adequately trained and great.
Right.
And it's a big field, and you know, I would suggest that if anyone wants to know what super training is, they should subscribe to the Target method.
Great.
And I'm sure our folks would be willing to give an additional discount.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a money-back guarantee. All they have to say is we don't like it. We don't ever ask a question. But there's 15 hours there. It'll get people into this field. And even if they can't prescribe, they will walk away from their high likelihood to understand in great depth what these hormones are about. And it'll also get into thyroid, which is relevant. So, you know,
it's great.
Just my opinion, but I think that'd be a great thing for everyone interested in functional endocrinology, even if they can't prescribe, to have a deep knowledge about the endocrine system.
Yeah.
Not those wild, unusual pathologies, but the basics like menopause and hypothyroidism.
Yeah. Yeah, we do a lot of training in hypothyroidism and thyroidism and all. And I know you go into a lot more depth on the menopausal stuff than the sex hormones.
Just to go back, just to repeat myself, it may be during that first visit to a non-prescriber, they go, whoa, the elephant in the room what needs to be addressed for me to be even able to tell where this person is in their own existence is to replenish these hormones right away. And so then the tactical issue becomes, how do I link up with someone knowledgeable?
Yeah. And do you have a referral network?
We have trained, well, there's been 100 nurse practitioners and doctors who have taken our full 15 hours. And so we have a woman in our organization that if someone sends in this request, ask a doc, ask them, let's see, I forgot what it is, but it has to do with, is there a doctor in my area?
Yeah.
She can either hit within 5 miles or 200 miles or, you know, something like that.
Yeah,
and
okay.
I learned early on because I was, in the early days, there wasn't a lot of experts, so people were willing to travel, fly 1,000 miles to come see me once because I only had to see them once.
Yeah.
I did want to see them in person for the law calls or visit. Plus, got them going. The rest it could be done with Skype or telephone, and I have many patients that I only saw them at once, and I've been treating them.
That's awesome.
Nothing else is needed. I can UPS them. The pharmacy can ship them the hormones that I prescribed.
Right.
So I'm willing to travel. Now, a lot of people don't have to travel very far because these physicians and nurse practitioners are all over the United States.
Yeah. Great. Great. So another question I had was, you said that some, you know, you'll do an extensive blood workup, but you don't always do the 24-hour urine right up front, but you will prescribe without having that. So I'm just curious, how do you determine, like, levels and doses and ratios and all that when you don't have the testing?
Well, in the extensive blood work that I spoke about, I never test for hormones.
Okay.
The only hormone-related tests, I'm sorry, I definitely test for thyroid.
Right, exactly. Never test the sex hormones.
Yeah, but I do get a blood sex hormone binding globulin as a base line, and that's SHBG because that's going to bite, that's going to really interfere with some programs if that's distorted. And any woman who's been on birth control pills, a lot of those women have distorted SHBG.
Yeah, I've seen them.
Those are challenging.
Yeah.
They're possible, but they're challenging. So I like to have a baseline because if they get into excessive hormones, you're going to jack up their SHBG. So a baseline, that's what I like having through the blood as it relates to ovarian hormones.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I assert this, that questionnaire in my examination is all the information I need to identify a woman in menopause.
Mm-hmm.
When I first started doing this, 25 years ago, I was testing everybody with 24-hour urines.
Mm.
What did I learn? They have hot flashes, they're super low, you know? And so anyone whose period has stopped, they're super low on estrogens and progesterone, and testosterone and the androgens is variable. And I can talk about that later. That was one of your questions.
Yeah.
Anyone who's erratic, they're now having periods every other month or every 3 months, they're way low on estrogen, their progesterone is tanked, and they need some additional estrogen because they're having hot flashes, they're tired, they're gaining weight, etc.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm saying is the history and physical tells me everything I need to know to start them.
Yeah.
Now, there is an occasional woman, and I love these situations, where all she needs is progesterone.
Mm-hmm.
And these non-prescribers can do great work here. Very important.
Yeah.
Because you can get progesterone over the counter.
Right.
Transdermal progesterone. You can't get the organic oils-based formulas, but over-the-counter will do all the good.
Yeah.
And when I was in medical school, and I'm taking a little diversion here, but I think it's an important one for the non-prescribers, I was taught that the onset of menopause occurred simultaneously with the cessation of ovulation and the cessation of periods. It was somewhere around 45 when I was in medical school.
Okay.
Now, the average age of cessation of menstruation is still 45 to 54, somewhere in there, depending on who you read. But the average age of cessation of ovulation is 35.
Oh, thus the infertility epidemic.
That's part of it. But the main reason that this is relevant is in order to produce progesterone out of the ovary, you must ovulate. So women who are ovulating erratically or not ovulating at all, but they're still menstruating, because estrogen really is what forms the endometrial lining hormonally. The hormonal contribution to menstruation is estrogen forming the endometrial lining. So you only need estrogen to menstruate. You do not need progesterone. So if a woman comes into my office and she's 35, she's saying, I'm not feeling so good, I'm not sleeping so well, I got breast tenderness. I never had breast tenderness except when I was 14. Mm-hmm. My breasts are swollen. She's got symptoms of overstimulation of estrogen, because estrogen stimulates breast glandular tissue, and progesterone quiets that stimulation down. So progesterone, you get what's called estrogen dominant effects.
Right.
But one thing, we are the foundation of the target men is to bring risk as close to zero as we can get. Mm-hmm. We can't eliminate all illness. But one thing we don't want is unbalanced overstimulation of the breasts by estrogen.
Right.
Progesterone, women who have fibrocystic disease, sometimes it works to have women rub transdermal progesterone onto their breasts. Why? Because progesterone quiets down breast glandular stimulation.
Right.
So to be able to identify a woman between the ages of 35 and when her periods cease who is irregularly ovulating or not ovulating at all, and thus having estrogen dominance, and giving her transdermal progesterone, you are doing a world of good.
Great.
It's one of my favorite clinical things to do, is to pick up when a young woman has ceased ovulating. Give her that progesterone, and it's going to be protective, and it's going to protect her bones, because progesterone protects bones. It's the only thing I know that stimulates osteoblasts to lay down new bones. I don't know of any other substance that does that. Mm-hmm. The brain, the mood, the sleep, progesterone. Well, we list the details of what progesterone does and is, and what progesterone insufficiency symptoms are in the target method.
That's great.
We distilled it down to a card that our pharmacy actually ships out with the first prescription to women, that on one side has estrogen deficiency and estrogen excess symptoms, and on the flip side has progesterone insufficiency excess and testosterone excess. We give this to every patient because we want them to become the experts in this.
Yes.
I'm finally making it to your original question. What do you do?
Yeah.
I once had the great fun and good fortune to shadow Alan Gaby. I don't know if anyone knows who he is.
Of course, yeah.
In his practice, and we're going patient to patient. This is a long time ago. And we walk into this room, and he's examining the patient and talking to her, and he walks out of the room, and he says, this woman is hypothyroid. And you haven't a clue as to what to write down on your prescription pad for how much thyroid to give her. People are so individualist to how sensitive they are to anything, how much dose they actually need. But no worries, we're going to have her find her own dose. And I'm sitting there, this guy went to medical school. I went to medical school. I never heard the word find your own dose.
Yeah. It's heresy in medical school.
Well, it's becoming more and more common. People are getting hip to this.
Good.
And some women, you got to start so low and go up so gradually because they're so sensitive, and give them a lot of time before dose changes. Other women... rather more substantial doses. But the whole principle is you start low, and whatever hormones you're choosing to give them, gradually increase, not rapidly, that dose, and your whole goal is to titrate away symptoms of hormonal insufficiency while falling shy of or backing down from symptoms of hormonal excess. Again, we go into very precise detail in the target market.
Great.
And in fact, I think one of the best things we've ever done for prescribing practitioners is we put together these starter kits that has a bottle of biased, and I'll talk about bias later, mm-hmm. a bottle of progesterone, one of those symptom cards, and a DVD that tells women how to titrate, how to apply it, where to apply it.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Would a prescriber who doesn't know anything about hormone could just order the starter kit.
Wow. And let them fix it.
As they go. Dose.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
We teach you how to identify the sensitive, so you start them on a lower dose or the regular, so-called regular. You start on a little more regular dose, and how they titrate up, and what pace to increase. There's a lot of discrimination required by the practitioner to help a woman. So the more you learn, the better of a guide you can be. And so we titrate. And that's to go back to answer your question. Well, how do you start with a woman? You can figure out she's low in hormones. She's got hot flashes, night sweats. She can't sleep. Her energy has dropped. She's been gaining weight in all the wrong places. This woman is in menopause. She doesn't have a period.
Right.
And we just send her a starter kit and have her start the biased and progesterone. I used to start them as individual items, but they're so both required in a woman who's not having periods anymore that we start them both together because that balances. We teach you how to titrate them independently. But the key word there is titration. Again, we go into great detail on this in the start and the target mode.
I love it. It's so aligned with how I teach. It's any herbs, any supplements. You know, I hate capsules. I hate pills because you can't get them to titrate. I like powders and liquids and creams, and you can just a little bit. Okay, that's good. Okay, a little bit more, a little bit more, and everybody finds their dose. I had a brother who did that just by being cheap. I gave him some B liquid B, and he said, "Well, when I take the dose you told me to take, my urine turns orange. Doesn't that mean I'm excreting it?" I said, "Sure." He goes, "So I just started gradually decreasing the amount until I got to the amount where my urine didn't turn orange. I increased it a tiny bit so it got slightly orange, and I'm not throwing my money down the toilet." And I'm like, "Well, that was pretty brilliant." So it's, you know, that's a slightly different, but it's
thing. I've always wondered about that. People say, "Well, if your urine was orange, you're just peeing away what you purchased." But it's the real question to me is what's happening between the mouth and the urine. I mean, I think a lot is getting.
Lots happening. A lot, of course.
Some of the color is still coming out, but it's done a lot of good.
But it's done a lot of good on the way in. But if you have a way to just get it to the point where you're keeping what you need. Anyway, so it's different.
You did that important principle on me.
You get the principle is so important.
You stick in our mouth. Anything.
Anything. Yes, or on the skin, exactly. And do you have a preference between, you mentioned transdermal, but there's a lot of talk about transmucosal. You want to talk to that and what your feeling is?
Well, my absolute favorite is transdermal.
Okay, why is that?
And any method that we can talk about has got its pros and cons. Well, let's say, and the mucosal symptoms, such as internal vaginal labia, the inside of the vaginal labia, or inside the vagina, this is an amazing absorptive surface. Mm-hmm. But if a woman is having intercourse, then the man is going to pick up the estrogen.
Got it. Okay.
Or there's more than that. I find it imperative to do excellent testing. Mm-hmm. If I want to know what a hemoglobin A1C is or a fasting glucose is, I want to test the blood because it's great.
Right.
And other things. But if I want to know what hormones are, especially with people I'm treating with hormones, I defy anyone to give me an argument for anything other than the 24-hour urine hormone collection. Mm-hmm. In my particular opinion, nothing else works right. Now, that's a blanket statement. So a woman who is applying estrogen to her vagina, it shows up in the urine because the urethra empties out into the vagina. It contaminates the urine. I can guarantee
it
can happen. And the vaginal mucosa, it doesn't absorb every single molecule. There's always some residual there. And
yeah.
We see it all the time. So we have to give up on the vagina. The transperianal mucosa, the external perianal mucosa, I'll recommend that quite a few times because sooner or later with transdermal, you wind up with something called dermal fatigue. And
you've
got to rotate surfaces or got to turn to other methods. Let me talk about transdermal. a little bit general. We're trying to reduce risk to as close to zero as we can get it, as I mentioned. That would, let me just say, then never give a woman an oral estrogen.
Never oral estrogen. That's my feeling, too.
Clotting problems. Remember that pulmonary embolus stuff with birth control pills?
Yeah.
Life-changing or ending events. These clotting issues and several other issues.
Yeah.
Both from oral estrogen.
Not worth the risk.
Exactly. And then we're trying to reduce it.
Right. We're trying to reduce it. Yeah.
Never. Said never. Is there such a thing in medicine? No. There was one patient in my whole history. He was in her 90s. She couldn't be transplanted. There was no way. And so we gave her oral estrogen. But that was one out of thousands.
Yeah. It's you, like you said, everybody's unique, and you find situations where something is going to go against your norm. But going back to the practice. Is that again?
Testosterone.
Same for testosterone, no oral testosterone.
Never oral. Okay. You can injure someone's liver. Not everyone's liver.
Right.
But you don't see any pharmaceutical oral testosterones out there. You still see oral, but it shouldn't be.
What about DHEA? We do a lot of the little sublingual drops of DHEA.
I like
slow dose.
For one, although we often use a transdermal DHEA, you run out of surface areas at a certain point. So oral DHEA is so good. And so now for women, I highly recommend that no woman get more than 15 milligrams.
Thank you for saying that. Somebody's on here yesterday on a call said her doctor put her on like 50 milligrams of oral DHEA as a woman. And oral estrogen, and it was estrogen and testosterone. It was an estrogen to estradiol testosterone combination. I'm like, come to this call, please. You want to hear what Dr. Rosensweet has to say? Because I was like, I'm not happy with that.
More than 15 milligrams, I'm sorry, of DHEA. Yeah. Maybe, but you better be doing frequent 24-hour urine.
Very frequently checking.
With most women, with 15, and some women are going to need 10.
Yeah, I usually do the little drops, and you know they're like 1.2 milligrams per drop, and just have people titrate up at most 15 across the whole day, and have them spread it out 3 times a day.
I have yet to see a woman in her 60s who has anything other than an extremely low DHEA.
Mm-hmm.
Women in their 50s, they can have a very low DHEA or a low DHEA, but that's about it.
Mm-hmm.
The androgens are drawn upon in the biology of the stress response. Unless you're enlightened, you're going to trigger a big biology to that stress response.
Yeah.
You're going to deplete your androgens.
Yeah.
Or later, so you can guarantee androgen problems. So you can count on having someone
Great. Well, one more practical question, then a testing question, then I want to get to all the questions that were submitted. One was, can you do the oils? I've known creams you could do transdermally, transmucosally if you wanted to, but can the oils be applied? They can. Okay, good. That was just practical. And then
these are organic. Have undergone tremendous testing by one of the biggest food suppliers in this planet, who wanted to use this oil in some of their processed food stuff. So there's, but they couldn't get enough supply, so they gave up on trying to
cook
foods with this particular oil. There's several oils, and more than one oil.
So is there one particular pharmacy that compounds or that does it for you?
Yes, we've authorized one pharmacy because we test them in my whole 24-hour urine hormone testing program. I know so much about the different formulations because I've tested all the women. And if you start dealing with more than one different pharmacy, you're going to wind up with something called variability between pharmacies.
Yeah. Not good.
So any single prescriber, I suggest you find your favorite pharmacy and stick with them. I tried going for the convenience of the patient and just have them show up at their local compounding pharmacy because I had people all over the country, and I started getting these
weird results
that I couldn't.
But then they're not getting the organic oil formulations that you've.
Now, if there's only one pharmacy that
only one pharmacy that does that. Are you at liberty to say the name of that pharmacy?
It is TW Wellness.
Are you the only one who can prescribe them, or if somebody does have another doctor?
We're a compounding pharmacy in Albuquerque. I've worked with them for 25 years. Brilliant.
TW Wellness. Great. It's good to know.
And somewhere on our website, there is connection or telephone number. Anyone can email.
Yeah, we can look it up. I mean, Google is like, you know, you can find anybody anywhere in a hole somewhere if you need to. So the other question before I go on to our submitted questions is about the 24-hour. You've been doing that for a long time. The recent thing that came out over the last couple of years is the Dutch test, the dried urine, and Meridian just came out with that as well, and they do the 24-hour. So I'm wondering if you've done any side-by-sides, if you have an opinion on one versus the other. Certainly, the dried urine is much easier for patient compliance. So anyway, your thoughts.
Well, I've known about the single dry urine or the several dry urines for quite a while.
Yeah, the multiple. Yeah.
And I haven't got interested in it. And I've had a long-standing connection with a PhD who runs a 24-hour urine hormone lab that only does hormones. That's all he tests. He's been doing this for a long, long time. And he and I have discussed, should we go into the single urine because it's so much easier for the patient? And then Jonathan Wright is a dear friend, and we ran seminars together. And I haven't sat down and talked to him about that single urine. I saw that they started doing that.
Well, it's not a single urine. It's 4 points.
4 urines.
Yeah, it's four urines dried sample, yeah.
And I haven't talked to him about that.
Okay.
So, unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to give you an idea.
Okay.
The thing I like about the 24-hour urine is you're treating a woman with hormones and she's on her regular regimen and she continues in taking that regimen, and we collect every single drop of urine for 24 hours.
Yeah.
And we see what's getting excreted and how it's metabolized.
Yeah.
So that comes, that's one thing. Here's another thing. When I first heard about the 24-hour urine and I took a list of the list of analytes that were involved there, I went, this is crazy. This is like, who can learn all this? There's all these analytes, all these metabolites.
Right.
But I started doing them because it made sense to me. I want to be able to check a woman in real time.
Yeah.
She's taking the hormones. What do I see while she's taking the hormones? I can't do that with blood.
Right.
6 in the morning, when do I draw the blood? 2 hours later?
Yeah, exactly.
And I started, and I was doing saliva also at the time. And I started seeing that the 24-hour urines correlated beautifully with the woman's symptoms.
Mm.
And I started seeing the purpose of all those analytes.
Yeah.
All those metabolites. And I said, this is why they chose all these. This. Mm-hmm. And the saliva did not correlate.
They don't.
I just can't get behind something that's done in spot, even though it's 24-hour urine, even though it's urines. I never felt cozy with the dry paper, and I'm probably way off here. I'm probably a dinosaur in this regard. So I will talk to Dr. Wright about it. Dr. Wright is most likely going to join the Target Method. We just recorded him in our studio. I'm in a recording studio right
now. Oh, wow. Great.
And so we'll iron all of this out. But what I can stand behind is the beauty of the 24-hour urine. And here's what I've learned about my patient population. I've been very, very fortunate. The people who have come to me, these are the best. The best of the best. This isn't necessarily the general population. And if I believe in it, and I say, and I want you to do a 24-hour urine hormone collection, they just do it.
Yeah.
And occasionally I'll hear a complaint, that was tough, and you know. But mostly they figure it out, it's not hard.
Right.
And then, because I can stand behind those, so I learned so much about them, including those safety factors,
right,
that we all wind up loving it. And the price is one of the cheapest, it's the best, one of the best cost bargains in medicine. Like the current price is $250 for a series of analytes, and it's just ridiculous.
Hmm. I thought they were like $400 or $500.
Sway over to the single spot test. But I'm not even interested enough to do anything other because you're asking to check in with Dr. Wright. And the conversations I had with my favorite PhD in the world of hormones is we started going, and he says he's bumping into problems. So that's why I can't endorse it or get interested in it. So.
Well, I think, you know, for me, I've done one person which did, you know, who did the two of them like a month apart. And so that's really hard to tell. It'd be really, you'd want to see, do it on the same day, which is a cost prohibitive thing for most people to do, but to do them on the same day and see how they compare.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
we could get behind, I'm sure Dr. Wright has already done something along this line, comparing both methods.
Yeah, yeah. I'll be curious to see what he has to say. I talked to him about a year ago at a conference, and that was when he didn't have that test, and he didn't have good things to say about the other company that did, because there were a couple of metabolites that they didn't have.
Exactly.
And so he did incorporate that into his. But, you know, now I didn't really get to talk to him about the technology of it. So it'd be great to find out from him, has he compared them? I mean, they can obviously do that. They can do them side by side, same urine sample, do the same one, and do both testing, you know. I mean,
what I can say about 24-hour urine is it's tried and true.
Yeah, it is. Okay, cool.
It was being used in the 1940s.
Yeah. Wow, it was, really?
It was. Beautiful work.
Oh, I didn't know that. I thought it came out when Meridian came out with it back in, you know.
40s.
Oh, wow. Okay. So, given all that, what's the other thing I was thinking?
Any prescriber or non-prescriber, any medical professional, as far as I know, can order the 24-hour urine kit shipped to their patient or shipped to their office so they can hand it to their patient.
Well, Meridian won't do it from non-prescribers, but we have an agreement with them.
There's another lab.
Oh.
And if they're worth checking with and people can get their name, I can find out for people.
What's the name of the lab?
While we're talking, I will email them.
Email it. Okay.
Go ahead, I can multitask.
Yeah, you can hear me? Okay. Say it again.
So I believe I can multitask.
Oh, you were looking it up. Okay, I didn't realize you were looking it up. I see now you're looking at your computer screen. So when you do it, since you're doing it after people have been on hormones, are you ever doing it for premenopausal women just to check the status and... So you don't have to worry about what day of the month they do it on if they're perimenopausal or postmenopausal, or do you?
You do. Let's talk about it.
Yeah, let's talk about it.
The main use I have for 24-hour urine hormone testing in general, is in menopausal women that I'm treating. And I usually don't bother to test them until they come to me and say, wow, I've been on these hormones for 3 months. I finally figured out my dose. I'm feeling a lot better. That is 95% of the time when I do that first test. I know what my dose is, and all these symptoms are gone. I say, great, let's test you. Just to confirm, and there's a lot of things I can confirm there, but that's when I test. And then every patient that I work with, I test them annually.
Mm-hmm.
Anniversary of that first test. Now let's talk about other times to test. Tricky. And very capable of delivering up information that is going to throw you and the patient off. Let's take a woman in the perimenopause. This is when her hormones are most erratic. And there's this ping pong match going on, so to speak, metaphorically, where the ovaries haven't put out enough estrogen, for example, and the pituitary ramps up and says, wait a minute, you got to put out
more. More. LH goes flying up.
Yep. FSH,
yep.
And you get a blast out of the ovaries of estrogen levels higher than she's seen most of her womanly life. And you test her on that day. Because I have done, you can't pick them out. The erraticness is going like this,
yeah.
The lows and highs. Over the course of the month, she has not produced as much estrogen as her body's used to. She is getting hot flashes. She is gaining weight. She has breast tenderness. Hot flashes, she's low in estrogen. But you happened to test her on the day when she peaked. And so both of you are looking at the lab results, and you know you got to give her estrogen to get her some relief. And she's got an excessive amount of estrogen, and you see she's got an excessive amount of estrogen. You're going to be checking to give her estrogen, which means you're not going to get results. So I stopped testing even in the perimenopause, having bumped into this particular glitch. Let's talk about women who are regularly menstruating.
Yeah.
They're menstruating every 28 days or 30 days or 26
whatever,
days.
Yeah.
Regular. You're not going to see a lot of those women. A lot of them are doing really well. Some of them you're going to see. Now, there's young women who've got PMS or fibrocystic breast disease.
Right.
You'll really want to try and check them at a certain specific time. And if it's a 28-day period, it's on day 21. This is when there is a coincidental peak of estrogen output and progesterone output.
Yep.
And we go into this in great detail in the argument.
Great.
And that can be revealing. Here's some of the kind of things you can learn. Oh my God, she put out a good amount of estrogen there and her progesterone's flatlined. Ooh, she didn't ovulate. Ooh, this is a time for progesterone. That's what you can learn, but you can learn that from the symptoms too.
Yeah.
People say to you, some months I feel fine. In other months, I don't feel fine. I get PMS and breast tenderness. She's getting overstimulation of the uterus and the breast by excessive amount of estrogen, not
okay.
Progesterone. So why do you need the testers? You need progesterone. Now, what are you going to do with your test result? I've had two patients, well, we did a whole study, actually. I was funded to get a study by, if you remember, Metametrics, who was taken over by Genova. They funded a six-year study of young women 19 to 28, regularly menstruating, relatively healthy. We checked them on day 21 or 20, depending on the length of the cycle. And so we got some pretty good parameters of what constitutes normal hormone output in young women. What did we learn? It's all over the place. So, if you go ahead and test a woman when she's 32, what are you going to compare it with? If you look at hormonal ranges, no matter what lab you're dealing with, they're very raw. Which speaks to exactly that every one of you know.
Yeah.
You know women and men vary person to person.
Yeah.
There's the estrogen-rich women. There's the estrogen-lean women. And there's everyone in between. We don't get this comparison. There's the testosterone-rich men, there's the testosterone-lean men, everything in between, outside the line. Because precise age-specific, weight-specific, life-specific, stress-specific, it's impossible. Why they funded the test was to try and get normal ranges. We thought they'd be very narrow on these young men.
And they're not.
But they were not. They were all over the place. And then you're dealing with different variables, estrogen, progesterone. You don't want to make it sound hard. Treating women in menopause is actually, it can be as simple as giving a starter kit, have them find the right dose, check them, and do some other things. And it's beautiful because the results are so profound. So you don't want to make it sound too complex. It doesn't matter that all these crazy things are going. You've got enough perspectives, including your history, your physical, your ongoing dialogue, titration, and testing. You've got enough stuff going that you can come up with great determinations every single case. You just got to be willing to deal with the individual.
Exactly.
I do that anyway.
Critical. That's what we do. That's what we teach. That's the whole thing. And I see the point of, doing the follow-up test once you've put them on the hormones. Even if they're feeling great, they go, I don't need to test. You want to make sure all the metabolites are safe, that they're not, 4-hydroxys or whatever.
And in my practice, in order for them to become a patient of mine, they have to read the first three pages of it. We have a list that they have to sign, and one of them is that they agree to annual 24-hour hormone testing. annual or every other year or every 3 years, mammogram, thermogram, transvaginal ultrasound if they've got a uterus, the occasional bone density. We give them a list of exactly what it's going to look like. We're transparent. This is what it's going to look like to deal with me. You like it?
That's good. Yeah, otherwise we're not going to do it. That's great. That's great. That's setting up expectations right at the beginning. Yeah, I love it.
Safe. Here's why you test them every other year. A couple things can happen. They can be so healthy on a certain dose, and like you said, run into liver problems and metabolization problems, and it's getting some torques in there that we don't want to see. We want to correct if we can.
Right.
Here's a common thing. They have jacked up their dose a little bit, and they've pushed themselves out of healthy ranges. Now, there's been a lot of women over the course of the years who have taken excessive amounts of Premarin and Prempro. That's okay. But the vulnerable women, like I say, we're trying to reduce the risk to zero.
Yes.
So develop very narrow parameters of what I want to see those 24-hour urine estrogen levels look like.
Yeah.
For those of you who like numbers, just to plant a seed, it's between 8 and 14 milligrams of estrogen. We're going to have to look this up. For that to make sense.
Yeah. You teach all that in the method. So
when we add up estradiol and estrone, these are the potent estrogens.
Right.
Somewhere between 8 and 14. This is a low dose treatment. Because the medical literature and my personal experience is it just doesn't take much to achieve what we really want. Which is healthy bones, healthy arteries, healthy mind, strong muscles, all the way to when we do birth. It doesn't take that much. It's beautiful. The numbers are there. And just as a practical thing, for anyone who's doing vaginal exams, if that vaginal mucosa looks healthy, they're on enough estrogen.
That's
how simple it is. You see vaginal atrophy there, they don't have enough estrogen.
Got it.
Now, that's not the only parameter that you use to evaluate things, but you want to know if they're too low, ask them about it. Treating miracles? Are they having to use lubricant where they never used to? If they are, they've undergone some vaginal atrophy, they're not enough estrogen, they're not enough, and it doesn't take very much to restore vaginal health, decent vaginal health. So we get specific about the numbers on 24-hour urine.
Good. Great. So what if, this is a question that comes up, what if someone sails through menopause, no problems at all, and the only symptom is vaginal dryness? Do they still need the estrogen?
I've always been in general practice in the sense that I've dealt with newborns, intrauteros, and patients in their 90s and in the process of leaving Earth. And I've had quite a bit of experience with the 60-year-olds, 70-year-olds, ooh, a lot, and the 80-year-olds and the 90-year-olds. And I take no solace from, hey, I'm doing fine, I don't need anyone. Who's doing fine? Usually the overweight women. You show me a thin woman over the age who's got a good BMI, a healthy BMI, who's in menopause and is doing fine. Women who are overweight, they got a lot of adipose tissue there, and those adipose tissue is factories for producing and converting testosterone into estrogen, so they're not getting the hot flashes. Mm-hmm. I've had very few significantly overweight patients in the menopause practice.
Got it.
Yeah. Here's what happens when you run too low testosterone. You get sarcopenia. I had a gerontologist tell us in medical school, you know, you've learned a million diagnoses and pathology in your clinical training. And let me tell you what's really happening to older folks. He says they're losing their muscle and they're weakening their bones and they can't stand up at a certain point or walk straight and they fall onto their osteoporotic hips, they fracture their hips, and a couple months later they're gone. So you want to do something for older folks, you help them with their muscles and their bones.
Mm-hmm.
And I defy anyone, an elderly woman, to not have osteoporosis or sarcopenia if they're not replenishing their estrogen, their progesterone, and their testosterone, and their DHEA. And there's not. I assert this. You'd have to show me a case of someone who had chronically low estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, DHEA, and thyroid that had healthy bones and muscles.
Oh, well, if all that's low, unlikely, yeah.
Yeah, we're gonna waste that. And not only that, you get sarcopenia of the levator ani, which means the bladders start falling.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why the Depends, the adult diapers industry, is so successful financially. And I can tell you about older women, they don't like them.
No.
They're strong, they're willing to adjust to them, but they don't like them. They don't like coughing and losing their urine. They don't like incontinence.
Right.
You need your levator ani. So you need, that means testosterone and DHEA. And you need estrogen, because you get a certain amount of vaginal atrophy, eventually that urethral meatus is going to get so irritated, you can start getting repetitive bladder infections so often. So, and how about the brain? I mean, when you look at, quote, Alzheimer's, one of the risk factors for Alzheimer's is low estrogen. There's a certain number of women with dementia who just get into them. Or you take menopausal women, and what is their, one of the most common complaints? Am I talking too much?
No, I don't think so. Is he talking too much, guys? It'll take a while. They're 15 seconds behind us. Keep talking. I'm enjoying it.
Okay. One of the most common complaints of women going to menopause, and these are high-functioning women who are doing a lot in their life, and all of a sudden they're getting brain fog. They're not thinking clearly. They're not remembering clearly. Where in the heck did that come from? Well, you restore their estrogen, and they're starting to think clearly again.
Yeah.
It's 1 + 1 = 2. You lose that estrogen, there's going to be a certain high percentage of women who are not going to think clearly and not have a There's a lot of things that play in the brain, as every one of your practitioners know. It's about hormones. But my point is this. I encourage every woman, almost without exception, to at least explore the territory of hormone replenishing, whether they feel great or not.
And in that case, would you then do a test first to say, hey, in that case, you know, hey, I feel great. I mean, I'm 60, I feel great. I'm not on any hormones, sailed through menopause, good muscle tone, run, hike, bike, you know, whatever. I haven't done any testing, so I don't know if my hormones are out of balance. So from that perspective, would I test first and then say, okay, they are out of balance, so let's supplement?
Well, let me put it a different way. Something that's very helpful to my women patients is, yeah, you're doing fine in your 60s, but walk next time you walk down your street or anywhere, check out the 70-year-old woman. And the 80-year-old woman, and the 90-year-old woman, if you can see very many. How do they look to you? Do you want to become like them?
I mean, I already don't look like the 60-year-old women, so.
That's why they look like this. And there's, of course, the long list of reasons. The hormones are so potent, they're right up there. And since I've dealt with falling bladders, Depends, walkers, wheelchairs, women who get out of a chair. If you go to my Target Method website, you'll see a picture of my mother-in-law who could not get out of a chair. And we gave her transdermal testosterone, and we have the video of her getting off a soft, low couch without using her hands with this big smile on her face.
Nice.
And we have a video of my own mom who could not climb the stairs and was walking with a cane and really needed that cane. And we have a picture of her walking towards me with no cane after being at home for a while. Now, it doesn't stave off the inevitable, and there's a lot of factors that lead to those wheelchairs.
Yeah.
And the dementias, et cetera. But knowing what I know, and knowing how I like to live, and how my women patients like to live, we want to live strong. Mm-hmm. And if we say, well, it's natural to deteriorate. Well, I could say, no. You know, so much of the deterioration has occurred because we had an inappropriate response to the stress of our life. We engaged the full fight or flight biology. We wore down our hormonal system. We have no idea what would happen if you come to the earth enlightened and you don't freak out every time.
And eat real food and breathe clean air and drink real water and all that kind of stuff.
And you have an accepting response to the ups and downs and vicissitudes of your loved ones and everybody else.
Huge.
Room for suffering and acceptance of your own, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We don't inaugurate the full biology of the stress response. We go into this in great detail in my favorite new project, which is called I Wonder Doctor.
Ooh.
iwonderdoctor.com. And if you look at the anxiety and depression section, we keep going on and on and on. There's about 40 videos up there. You can subscribe to it for free, which I go into great detail about the biology of the stress response and how it's torn us apart. Now, every one of your practitioners believe this, so I'm preaching, I'm talking to fire.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Cool. So we have some questions. I want to make sure we got them. Most of them we've covered and to some extent. No, I just want to clarify a few things. Drina asks, so we basically, how do we know when the common estrogen imbalance can't be helped with natural sources? How can we help our clients to find a good bioidentical hormone doc, which you already gave your reference, but what are some of the questions we should ask the docs to know if they know what they're doing?
Are they a firm believer in bioidentical hormones?
Mm-hmm.
What kind of testing methods do they use?
Mm-hmm.
A non-trained physician will say, well, you don't have to test women in menopause, because that's what they were taught. And there's reasons they're taught that, because you don't get good results or usable results from blood tests.
Right. Okay. The next one I think you covered, the postmenopausal numbers for the three estrogens and testosterone, progesterone. It depends on what you're talking about, right? If you're talking 24-hour urine.
Here's another thing. There are so many good doctors out there and nurse practitioners, zillions of them.
Yeah.
And we've started with people from scratch when a patient who was in a distant location asked their doctor, look, I want the bioidenticals. And they said, well, I don't know anything about it. And they say, well, this doctor will help you learn about it. It's not that hard. Can we do this together? And the open ones will go, well, that's interesting.
Mm.
And they start on the path. Because there's nothing like going to your own friendly doctor or nurse practitioner that you love and trust. And once they get it. So we work with these people. Like when someone does the target method, they have free access to me on every difficult patient they got.
Nice.
And they got that 15 hours of training program. So I don't see in this day and age that there isn't a way for a prescriber to.
Right. For them to get what they need.
Yeah.
Yeah. So getting to the ranges, I know you said that the estradiol plus the estrone should be between 8 and 14 combined on the 24-hour. But are there other numbers that we should be looking for in terms of testosterone and progesterone?
Well, progesterone, when you apply progesterone transurinally or even take it orally, it's so thoroughly metabolized that on 24-hour urine, it'll always be zero. But how you assess it is through its principal metabolite, which is called pregnenolactone.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, young menstruating women are putting out about 1,500 to 3,000. But you don't need those kind of levels because I'm a low-dose guy, so you're not trying to balance young, youthful levels. So I like to see a progesterone above 400, 500, somewhere in that territory. And it all depends on their dosage that they're taking as well. But there's several things that we check. We do an annual mammogram, or at least every other year. Well, we really individualize it because there's some women, they don't have breast vulnerability. There's a lot of ways to assess that just by looking at their past mammograms. So they get it every 2 years, every 3 years. There's some women, we're doing them annually and with thermograms.
Mm-hmm.
So progesterone, to really monitor another aspect of progesterone, we're doing transvaginal ultrasound.
Mm.
Annually is what the patients commit to. This is a low yield of problems. Most of the dosages we use, these endometria are not getting in trouble, but I've been doing this for 25 years and I had two shock cases of endometrial cancer to be caught really early.
Mm.
So to have adequate progesterone, you want to be making sure that you're not getting a thickened endometrial lining. or an irregular endometrial lining with adequate progesterone, you should not have thickened endometrial lining. And it doesn't take very much progesterone. We've got very low doses of progesterone. The suppressants we test by many parameters. How the woman is sleeping with progesterone.
Mm-hmm.
How thick the bones are with progesterone issue. Whether she's spotting. Yeah, she's spotting. You want to do the full investigation there because you can be thrown off, as I have. Catch endometrial cancer early, and it's a really curable thing.
Even though it's, Okay.
So, and then testosterone. Here's a, here's what happens in the perimenopause. We're going to talk about testosterone here too.
Yeah.
If I had to make a wild stab, I'd say 20%, 30% of women as they go into the perimenopause, the testosterone increases.
Increases. Huh.
And then because one of the few pathways for a woman who's got very low estrogen to create estrogen is produce more testosterone.
Yeah.
And she and you'll see some women in the perimenopause, they're getting facial hair. Mustache hair. Or chinny-chin-chin hair. They never had it. They're wondering, their androgens have risen, especially their testosterone. Now that's uncommon. Here's the most common thing. There's been so much stress over the course of the life, and they're not going to deplete their cortisol. They're going to divert resources towards cortisol. And they're going to deplete the androgens first. So you see a lot of women in the perimenopause who have androgen depletion. But practically speaking, we start most every woman off who's got symptoms of menopause with biased progesterone.
Mm-hmm.
Titrate those to adequate, to clinical relief,
mm-hmm.
test them. And when that first test happens, anywhere from 3 to 9 months, then we get to look with great precision at their androgens.
Mm-hmm.
Our shock, sometimes we see, look at that, they have those elevated and testosterone. Isn't that something? Uncommon, but it's there. Sure glad I didn't give them testosterone.
Mm-hmm.
More to libido than testosterone.
Right.
Or we'll see, look at that, she's depleted in testosterone and DHEA and androsterone and eicosanoline. Okay, she's low in her androgens. Okay, well, we've given her enough time to handle two variables, biased and progesterone. Now we're going to add into her regimen some testosterone and DHEA. We're going to have her titrate the testosterone and we'll give her a blanket dose of DHEA.
Yeah.
Now here's the intermediate people. They come to you and she's 56 years old and she stopped menstruating, she's got severe hot flashes, had a period for a couple of years. She's in menopause. And she's also saying this: my libido, which used to be vigorous, is tanked. My muscles, I work out 3 times a week, but I'm getting weaker and weaker. I started losing a little urine when I cough. You know this woman has got sarcopenia. You know she's low in androgens. So there is a certain small percentage of women that I will start not with a titration of testosterone right in the beginning, but with a steady dose of our testosterone and oils, a small amount, just to get her going on something I know she's low in because she screamed it at me. I no longer have an orgasm. I used to have an orgasm. My libido is way down. Out of a chair, or I'll ask her, how's your muscles? They're fine. They say, okay, get down into a squat and stand up. Or if she's a little older, I'll say, she's sitting in a chair, I'd say, without using your hands, stand up. And she's a little surprised because she's used to using her hands, which she never had in her life. That woman has got sarcopenia.
Okay.
Highly likely her testosterone is low. So in 20%, that's a wild guess, of the women that I treat right out of the chute, I'll have them titrate the bias and the progesterone, and I'll give them a low dose of testosterone just to get them going, and I'll get the DHEA because they know they need it.
Great answer. Because there's no absolute numbers that you're looking for any particular person. You're looking at the whole picture.
Exactly.
Which is great. Okay, so some of these we've already answered. Sherry says, are testosterone, one of my favorite topics, are testosterone pellets safe to get? First of all, she says, and if, I just would love to explore, are they safe at all to get? If triglycerides are high and HDL are low, will the pellets lower the HDL further?
Okay, great question. I've seen these questions, some of these questions before. There's some great questions there. I am not a fan of pellets. A lot of doctors who are fans of pellets. For what reasons, I'm not exactly sure. And I've met occasional women who are fans of pellets because, you know, the day you put those pellets in, you're getting a real high dose.
Yeah.
Some women feel supercharged and super good on high doses. And by the way, there's a high dose protocol on there that I warn everybody against. Don't do it. Do not try and restore youthful levels. Do not try and restore the period. Do not do it. Do not do it. Do not do it. And those are great reasons, specific, including the full laboratory exploration of what happens when you restore a period. So, you know, I'm not going to take the time unless you want to ask me that question, why I'm saying that. Well, I don't like these bursts.
Yeah.
Gradually over the month, they taper off, the next injection, and the next injection. I like things that people can do by themselves at home.
Yeah.
Body doesn't work in these bursts.
No.
The body does things daily at most.
Yeah. Follow the natural rhythm.
Exactly. So I don't like the injections. It ties you to the doctor, ties you to the office, and you get these bursts. So I am not a fan. Now, people will argue with me about this, but I can only give you my best shot. Do not do it. Now, HDL, LDL, lipids. What a wonderful topic this is. And this is totally in the umbrage of the non-prescribers. To get this right really matters. It's really about how do you help people lose weight, reduce insulin resistance,
mm-hmm.
not get diabetes of the brain called Alzheimer's.
Right.
This is a big story. My favorite mentors are the functional medicine people. And, you know, as far as teachers today, Barry Sears and Mark Hyman, they go into such wonderful detail on this. We go into it in I Wonder Doctor. We're marching down that trail. So if they choose right now the hypertension and the diabetes or the overweight choices, we're going to walk you right down there. And then what's on our menu of possibilities that we're about to film is the whole story about how do you get those fats right. This is what matters so much to me around HDL, LDL. It's not about hormonal balance. Get the hormones balanced.
Yeah.
Yes, they are going to affect the HDL and the LDL. But the main effectors are the daily diet and the relationship with insulin.
Absolutely. Yeah. We do a very big module. We probably have 12, 15 hours of education on insulin resistance and go through all of that. So that's the main.
And inflammation and bravo, because this is epidemic. This is epidemic on this planet.
Yes.
It's the biggest elephant in the room. We have to deal with it at any age.
Yeah. It's huge. It's the biggest one. I agree.
You like Sears and
You know, Sears, there's some things I agree with a lot of things in principle, but there's some things that about his diet that I just have to go, it's a little weird. And some of his, you know, the whole concept of eicosanoids, and we talk a lot about that. But yeah. There's a few things about the way he approaches it. Mark Hyman, I'm much more aligned with in terms of his approach. I still have a few, nuances that we do in blood sugar balancing that he doesn't address with folks that I think we do a lot better. But overall, I really like Mark Hyman. Yeah.
Fantastic. And there you go. It's an individual thing. You've got to see.
Yeah. But we try to individualize it. I teach postprandial glucose mapping. So I teach people how to actually know what foods to eat and what not based on how their body's reacting postprandially.
How are you going to get around that? It's like 24-hour normal testing. How are you going to learn about an individual patient if you're not checking them out?
If you're not checking it, right? You can say, blueberries are great food. Go ahead and eat 3 pounds of it. And then your blood sugar is going up to 165. No, sorry, that's not going to work for you.
that is what is needed.
Yeah. Yeah. And all my practitioners are deeply trained in that. So that's great.
And this is the big stuff. This
yeah.
Is
really I think so. I think it's huge because I think it's at the base of just about everything.
Yeah.
How to slowly build up. This is from Stephanie. How to slowly build up and signs to know when you're reaching the right dose. I think you've gone through that already, your whole process of titration. How quickly would you expect to see changes? And you mentioned 3 months.
Well, no, let me address that.
Yeah, okay.
There are situations at one end of the spectrum where you treat a woman and within days she feels better.
Mm.
And at the other end of the spectrum, it takes you 3 months before you're even getting in the ballpark. And there's everyone in between.
Individual, yep.
Yeah, and because some women, they've been into a deterioration of their health for quite a while.
Yeah.
And menopause is just one more factor, and they got bigger projects. And, you know, I don't observe the body to dramatically respond. It's taken a while to decline, takes a while to come out, and I'm very gentle. I err on the gentle side and letting people just get into the process.
Yeah, yeah.
I like to tell people, develop 5-year plans.
We do that too. That's great. Yeah, because you know what they're used to is the quick fix Band-Aid Western medicine approach that just, here's a sledgehammer, you know, take away the sledgehammer and your headache goes away. But, you know, there's it just doesn't work as quickly to restore the balance if they've been out of balance for so long. So giving them that kind of expectation that it could take, you know, this range of time. And then if you don't see changes at the 3 months, are you then testing to see how to adjust the dose? And do you use the testing to adjust your dosing?
Well, my favorite way to see my granddaughter is she's not menopausal.
No, I wouldn't expect that. You'd have to be really well preserved to have a menopausal granddaughter.
It varies. It really, as far as testing hormone goes, it really depends how long does it take a woman to titrate into clinical goodness. And the most common thing that happens is that in a short, medium, or longer period of time, women do titrate themselves into feeling a lot better. And then I say, we consult every couple weeks, every month, usually every month, until I hear them say the magic words, you know what, I'm getting this.
Mm.
And I can tell, they've stabilized, they've chosen their dose. They even made the experiment of taking a little higher dose than usual, wound up getting symptoms of overdose, and they had to back down.
Mm.
They have titrated their way.
Yeah.
To goodness. That's when I do the test.
Okay.
And it's very unusual to have that happen before 2 months.
Yeah.
It's more common for that to be 3, 4, 5, 6 months.
Okay.
Now, there are a certain number of women that, my goodness, it's tough. It's mysterious. There's something going on. I don't get it. And I have to test them in the time that they're having trouble. They're 2 months into it. There's things I can't figure out. They're not happy, but I need to test to get an idea where they're at. So I'll test those women.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'll test right from the beginning. It's very rare. The women who are seriously ill.
Mm-hmm.
They got fatigue levels that just aren't menopausal. And what I'm looking for as far as 24-hour urine hormone test goes is there are some women who've been under so much stress that their cortisol is depleted. This is an unusual event. We hear about adrenal fatigue all the time, but look out for that diagnosis. I think it's overused. The ultimate adrenal fatigue is the loss of the corticosteroids. That's life-threatening.
Mm-hmm.
And when I suspect there's a level of illness or fatigue that just surpasses, I'll test them right up front just to see with the corticosteroids, because it's hard to get anywhere in menopause if you don't handle the elephant in the room called corticosteroid depletion. Mm-hmm. It's rare. In my experience.
Yeah.
But that I'll test in the beginning. For that reason, almost alone.
Okay. Great. So we're starting to run low on time. I want to see if we can get through the rest of these. terms of, we talked about that one. How would you expect the relationship between hormones to change for someone with very low progesterone, low estrogen, and high testosterone by using bioidentical progesterone and estrogen? Would you expect the actual level of testosterone to come down aside from the ratio, or would the high testosterone have to be addressed by itself?
Excellent question.
Yeah. Yeah.
Started to address it earlier. If you did nothing, that high testosterone's going to come down. I can write people a written guarantee that a woman might have high testosterone early on in menopause, but give her 4 years, that testosterone is going to go below normal. Sooner or later, the androgens drop. You know, I can tell you that from testing. It happens.
Mm-hmm.
So it's another reason for ongoing testing is to detect when those androgens actually decline, because you do want to address them big time.
Mm-hmm.
You want to give a woman extra testosterone. It's not high testosterone to begin with. But I think your question here has raised a very important point. Will the testosterone drop if you start restoring estrogen? Does that give the body relief and so it doesn't have to push out those high testosterone levels? Hard to tell.
Hmm.
But the theory is really a good one, and I say watch individual patients in that regard. I bypass the whole challenge by starting every significantly menopausal woman, not the premenopause, but every significant menopause with bias and progesterone, and then I wind up testing, and then I see where their androgens are actually at.
Yeah.
If a woman comes in as I've got hair growth there that I never had, and she's in the premenopause, and the libido is risen, I can hardly believe it, and I'm getting angry, I wanted to punch people out, I go, she's gotten testosterone, or she is on high testosterone. I won't do anything about it. I'll do what your questioner is suggesting. I'll just restore the bias and progesterone, and she's likely to come into balance and feel a lot better and not have to produce that high testosterone. But again, I'm repeating myself, that testosterone is going to decline all on its own. You can write her a written guarantee. What are you going to do about it? Her body's going to do something about it. It will raise that sex hormone binding globulin if it's too high, and that's some problems there.
Yeah.
But I assert you're not going to have to do anything about it.
Good. And then would you say that that would help with a younger woman who has PCOS with the elevated testosterone?
PCOS. I don't think the key to PCOS is, I think testosterone is one of the results of stress and, oh my God, glucose, insulin regulated.
Right.
And stress, the biology of the stress response. And, you know, to be able to give people the tools to reduce the biology of those stress response, so they don't need the jolt of testosterone to respond to the Coca-Cola or to the saber-toothed tiger every day.
Yeah.
Eat it out.
Okay.
From my perspective, big things. Dietary.
Right, huge. Right.
And helping them with tools so the stress in their life may continue. We don't have to control that. But we do have to get very expert as how we respond.
Yeah.
Stress. Again, my best contribution to that is what I wanted to.
Is what?
My best contribution for actual skills that I find patients can learn is through our anxiety and depression track.
Got it.
And I wonder that.
Great. We'll check that out. Sounds great. Let's see what else. I think we got most of them. In terms of topical, where best to apply, we talked about it. How soon can you come back to the same area when rotating?
Where best to apply estrogens? I like the forearms. There's other places possible. Progesterone, the inner thighs. Testosterone, the clitoris, the external labia. A lot of men can pick up a little testosterone. It's not going to hurt them. Or the external perianal mucosa. And then there are alternative sites for estrogen. And one of them can be the shoulders here. We don't like the inner arms, even though they're a good absorptive surface, because they're close to the breasts when coming out of the shower.
Okay.
On direct application of estrogen. And we go through this in the target method. In fact, every woman that receives the starter kit gets a DVD of my daughter-in-law showing them exactly where to apply it.
That's great. I have a question about that, though. I've always understood and been taught that you want to apply it on the thin. So forearms, yes, but why would you do the inner thighs? Because there's so much fat tissue, and the hormones can get stored in the fat tissue.
Yeah, and it's a good absorptive surface, and it works.
Yeah.
And raise a good question about, is that the ideal place for progesterone? But I like to have body areas exclusive for one hormone. So I don't want to put biased and progesterone here.
Oh.
Okay. I just use one of the hormones for the bias. I can put biased here, I can put biased here. Where am I going to put the progesterone? You can put the progesterone on the abdomen, you can put it on the breast. Well, someone will get breast tenderness from applying to the breast. You can put progesterone. I don't like the lower extremities. Remember the leg trouble and the vein trouble with birth control pills?
Don't okay. Down there. So you don't want estrogens there. What about progesterone, like backs and knees or tops of feet?
I don't like backs and knees because I've had women who are obviously sensitive to progesterone. The sensitivity they talk about is that they get soreness in their legs, right along the vein that they got soreness is when they took birth pills.
Okay.
They're loaded with progestins.
Okay.
I like to stay away from the lower extremities.
So say somebody's, like you know, someone not sexually active, they can do labia and vaginal?
Can, but where
except when you're going to test.
Yes, and the way Dr. Wright gets around this is he switches to transperianal mucosa, external, he has women who are applying to the vagina, applying to the external anal mucosa during the time of the testing. Now, I haven't been in love with that because I don't know that that's going to be exact molecule for molecule.
Yeah.
What they're applying to the labia and the vagina.
Yeah, okay.
These are a certain level of details that I highly recommend if someone was open to it to actually do the target method.
Do the method. So you go through all this stuff. Okay.
Yeah, because we're getting into some wonderful details there.
Great. I think if you have a hysterectomy and mild to no symptoms, is from Ginger, what is the benefit versus risk to start an estradiol patch?
What was the first part of it? If you have a hysterectomy and
it says if someone has had a hysterectomy and mild to no symptoms, what's the benefit versus risk to start an estradiol patch?
Hysterectomy and what kind of symptoms?
No symptoms or mild symptoms.
Oh, well, losing the uterus, theoretically, you're not going to affect your hormonal situation.
Mm-hmm.
Losing the uterus plus the ovaries,
yeah,
you're in surgical menopause.
Yeah.
Do I like the patch? No. Do I dislike the patch? Well, if it's the only tool I had, I would choose the patch.
Mm-hmm.
Because bioidentical estradiol with some other absorptive enhancers, all of which are chemical names that I'm not a real fan of, but it's you know, it's pure estradiol, there's no estriol in it. So one topic I want to talk about is what bias contains is 80% estriol.
That's right.
And 20% estradiol, or any mix that you want, I often choose different mixes. But there's a reasons why it's 80% estriol, because that's the protective estrogen.
Right.
And we go into that in great detail because we want to encourage women to do estriol.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I totally agree with that.
So that's why I wouldn't choose the patch.
That's why you wouldn't choose the patch. Yeah, I had a feeling that was it. I think we've covered all of them. Did you see any other questions there that you wanted to answer that we didn't cover? I think we got all of them.
Look.
In terms of topical, we did that. After the Dutch test we handled and after how long you retest, we did all that. So... yeah, if anybody, let me look at the chat box and see if anybody's typed in anything else. So I'm just going to go down. Okay, so let's see. Everybody said, no, you weren't talking too much. They love it. So wanted you to know that. Okay, I think we're... Da-da-da-da. What would the main symptoms to look for when suggesting bioidentical hormones?
Hot flashes, night sweats, sleep disturbance, weight gain in the thighs and butt, mood changes, diminished libido, vaginal dryness.
Yeah, all the typical. So what, Jamie says, what are your thoughts on progesterone oil applied orally to the gums versus progesterone cream?
Oil applied orally to the gums. Well, I avoid oral taking of estrogen.
This was progesterone.
Oh, progesterone. I've never thought of applying progesterone to the gums. Progesterone is tolerated orally, and there's a certain percentage of women we do give oral progesterone to I've never applied transdermal type progesterone to the gums. It's interesting. Is it why they want to apply it to the gums?
Yeah, so to Janie, answer why you might want to do that. And then Tony says, if a woman uses birth control pills for 10 years or more and is now about 10 years on the other side of not taking them, would hormones rebalance without intervention, assuming no other imbalances? Would menopause be impacted from long-term birth control use, you know, even if it's 10 years prior?
Question. Sometimes yes, sometimes no.
Yeah.
I've seen women who took this is Tony describes, and 20 years later, they have an elevated sex hormone myoglobulin that got elevated by the excessive amount of hormones they took. Pills are. They're adding to a young woman who's given hormones, additional hormones, and it sets up the SHBT as a protective mechanism. And the trickiest situations to deal with in menopause is a woman who has an elevated sex hormone myoglobulin.
Yeah.
A lot of women will normalize. They'll stop those birth control pills and there'll be no trace left behind that we can detect.
Good.
A lot of them don't.
Yeah. Okay. Do you, and I don't know if you cover this. I know it's way beyond. We don't have time to go into it in full detail, but do you have strategies for helping people to get that sex hormone binding globulin down?
Yes,
I see it a lot.
Yeah. I mean, I know there's some natural strategies, and I've resorted to a trick by a dear friend, Dr. Shipman, who uses low-dose danazol. It's a prescriptive item. It does work. I've got 3 patients on danazol right now. It does work.
And okay, that's
doses on them to see what it takes to get it down.
Yeah, and you want minimal dose, but to be effective. Minimal effective dose, basically.
Exactly.
Susan wants to know your opinion on DIM to circumvent high estrone.
I like it. And really, the best information we get about the metabolites of estrogen comes from those 24-hour urines. And the most common thing that we actually see is good metabolization. We see a robust amount of 2-hydroxy estrone as compared to 16-alpha-hydroxy. But I used it frequently when I see an excessive amount of 16-alpha-hydroxyestrone.
Mm-hmm.
So we're trying to get the risk as low to zero, and I encourage brassica, and of course DIM, it is a derivative of brassica.
Right.
Here's another thing I checked with. Why isn't their liver handling these things properly?
Yeah.
So assessing the liver function, not through the blood test, they just tell us about liver disease.
Right.
I ask them in my questionnaire, can you walk into a mall? How do you do when you walk into a mall?
Yeah.
How do you do with drinking a cup of coffee at 8 o'clock at night?
Yeah.
If they can't handle a cup of coffee at 8 o'clock at night, and they could when they were in their 20s, they've got compromise of liver detoxification at 50.
Yeah.
And so are there remedies for liver? Yes, there are. My favorite is liver cleanses.
Yep.
You know what a piece of work they are to do.
Yep.
Then, as you restore, hopefully you restore to a wonderful diet.
Of course.
Exactly what defines that.
Yes.
And you take the pressure off the liver. Like I have a lot of patients who say, I love to drink a glass of wine every night. Yeah, I couldn't survive. I couldn't be as old as I am and drink a glass of wine every night.
Mm-hmm.
But I can now. So, you know, sometimes they think that you want to sort out what in the heck provoked their liver into not metabolizing things properly.
Right. Well, there's a lot, right? We know all the lifestyle factors and all, but we've been doing a lot of work with the genetics testing, and a lot of people have some of those SNPs that have impairment for caffeine metabolism or drug metabolism or, you know, PCBs and all sorts of stuff. So that's a big issue too. And then they have the SNPs for issues with that hydroxy, the COMT enzyme and things like that, where they can actually are not breaking down and getting rid of the 4-hydroxys and 16-hydroxys. So, you know, there's a lot there.
Down to the basics.
Yeah, basics, right. You support them.
We got to, the 24-hour urine is not the most rapid way I would do to test is their liver problems.
Yeah.
But you see liver detoxification problems, so don't rely only on them.
Right.
And I start evaluating, as I have all along, what kind of liver project you got? What kind of detoxification project you got? what kind of dietary project you
exactly
in the long run. Those things have gotten yes, genetics, but
right
about epigenetics, you speak lousy.
Absolutely,
then they're going to
absolutely. It's both. But the point is, when I look at the genetics and I tell them that, they're more inclined to really do the things because they go, "Oh, I can get away with that." No, you can't get away with that, right? So it helps. It's the leverage thing that we all like to have to get people to do the things that they need to do. But yeah, totally. Epigenetics is most of it.
For myself, I can get away with nothing.
Me too. Well, I have no old people in my family, so I'm like, I don't want to get old like everybody else did. I want to outlive them. I've already outlived my parents and everything. So, so that's great. One other was, can we get the organic oil-based hormones without a prescription?
No.
Yeah, unfortunately. All right. Hey, Eleanor, are we going to have a debrief from this call? We can, sure. Some people are having to go. Let's see. Have you talked about saliva tests? That's what her doctor likes, Mary Lynn. You don't like them.
There's people who advocate them. They argue with me. I tried both. And I've talked to several of my most knowledgeable colleagues. They don't use them. You know, I like saliva tests for testing whether a woman's ovulating. You can have to go that far. Saliva every 3 days or so, and you start seeing a bit of progesterone. I like it for that. Saliva is pretty good for cortisol.
Yeah.
It goes 4 times in, in cortisol because there's so much cortisol in saliva. There's so much, and there's so much DHA in saliva. Estrogens, we're talking about very tiny. I don't
like it. So you can't get a good assessment. Yeah, that makes sense.
Metabolites from it. I can't assess the androgens, the metabolites, so I'm a big
big fan of the urine, yeah. So Tony says, amazing information. Thanks so much. And then Stephanie, where can we order the starter kit? And that's basically they have to have a doctor order it for them.
They have to be able to prescribe. They have to be prescriber. Right. And I was just told that we're going to be happy to offer your students a discount, and I didn't ask how much, for doing the target method.
Yay.
We want to do that.
How do we?
You send us emails of those who want to do it, and we'll email them discount codes.
Okay.
And they get their money back if they don't like it. Within 2 months. They can say, I didn't like that stupid thing.
I doubt it.
we don't ask them any questions. We just refund their money.
I doubt it, yeah. Okay, so one last one is Jamie getting back and saying, reason for applying progesterone oil to the gums is that the membranes are very thin and that it quickly enters the blood. When mixed with vitamin E, when it is swallowed, the vitamin E allows it to be absorbed through the walls of the stomach and intestine. It can be assimilated along with food into the chylomicrons, permitting it to circulate in the blood to all organs before being processed by the liver.
Good stuff.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So the gums would be similar to applying it orally, it sounds.
I mean, because I don't know.
Yeah.
Eventually, if it becomes swallowed, it's fine.
Yeah. Right. Whereas estrogen, you don't want to swallow testosterone. Great. I hope Susan was on because the doctor put her on both estradiol and testosterone orally and no estriol. And I was like, honey, I come to this call. You've got to get something changed. Yeah. So I think that's all. You've been awesome, and thank you for all your time, and we're going to send everybody your way. So go to thetargetmethod.com and go to contact us and put your name in and get the 19-page questionnaire, and then we'll find out who's interested in the Target Method, and we'll send your emails in, and you can get a coupon. So it sounds
great. Go to iWonderDoctor if there's some of the...
And iWonderDoctor.com. Yeah, Lynn already posted that in here. Jamie said thanks so much. Everybody's saying thanks so much. So
my pleasure.
Appreciate it. Thank you so much.
You.
You take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.